this episode of Finding the Funny. I am Stephanie Michelle. For this episode, I am joined by comedian, storyteller, actor, model, and activist, Julia Pels. I have a lot of fun in this conversation. I feel like I get to know her a whole lot better, and I hope you feel like you know her better by the end of this episode. So without further ado, here's Julia and I talking comedy. I'm recording with Julia Pels today. And did I say your last name right?
Yes.
Okay,
You're the first person, I have to be honest, you're the first person who has pronounced my name correctly.
Really?
It is the last name. Usually people say Peels.
Okay.
I've never heard someone be like Julia Pels. I've never heard it.
Really?
People always somehow botch. Oh yeah, it's maybe once, but literally, there's always some weird twist they put on it, and I don't know how. So I don't.
I have people mess up my first name because there's an F in there, and they're like Stefani. I'm like, no.
Wait, what?
Yeah, and I'm like, no. Even Gwen Stefani doesn't spell it like that. Like, so you're already wrong.
Yeah. That's odd.
Yeah, I don't get it. I think it's so funny. I try really hard to not say people's last names, but if it's any last name, like wrong, but if it's any last name that has an accent, I'm going to probably fuck it up. Like, I can't.
I love it. I love that.
I try. I feel like such a horrible host when I mess somebody's name up.
No, don't feel bad, because you know what? There's so many different, I mean, I felt like a terrible person. I had a friend and I couldn't pronounce her name, but it was a really hard name to pronounce. Like, and it took me a while in comedy to pronounce it. And it wasn't me being, you know, like, irresponsible. I just like had a hard time remembering how to pronounce it. And I had to just keep practicing until like now I can pronounce it, just fine. But it took a while. Yeah.
And
it embarrassed me because, you know, I don't want to sound, because it was a Japanese name.
Okay.
So I didn't want to sound like an asshole, you know, because I'm Greek, but technically, you know, if you have to say I'm white, you know, whatever they, you know, whatever the fuck this dividing all of this is for us. But
yeah.
But, you know, I did my best but I was embarrassed. I wanted to make sure that I was pronouncing their name properly.
I get it. It's funny, the names I struggle with the most are Hispanic names.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I don't speak Spanish, and I get super self-conscious of having an accent because I don't have one. So it's like as soon as I talk with no accent, they look at me and it's like, okay, now there's a lot of negative stuff happens. So I'm like, I just avoid it now.
Yeah.
It's really bad.
Yeah.
But you host shows, right?
Yeah, I created, run, host Killer Unicorns. That's been going on for 4 years. We had our 4-year anniversary this April. I started it completely from the ground up, just meaning, you know, small theaters and small spaces and places and all that good stuff. And I just kind of grew it, and eventually it became a nationally recognized show. We were written up in Vulture. We've been written up a lot.
That's awesome.
I feel like, you know, it's not just about write-ups. It's about the environment, and the environment I try to create at shows is, you know, a free speech environment that is also going to be, you know, obviously respectful. If you start talking and saying, you're going to get the light, you're going to get booted. But I also believe in free speech, and I'm a libertarian, so I don't believe in cancel culture.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and especially in this cultural climate, I think things have gotten way too extreme for comedians.
Absolutely.
So our show is, I mean, we are what we sound. We're killer unicorns. We're fucking, excuse me.
You're good.
Excuse me. You can tell that I'm Greek and from Chicago. I've got a mouth on me. I usually don't swear this much in podcasts. It's been a week. I'll tell you, it's just been a week.
But we're not around people anymore, so I get it.
But yeah, that's the problem. And so, you know, I just feel like Killer Unicorns has it used to be, I used to, when I first, you know, really started, when I started the show in 2016, I was like, oh, this is a quote safe space. And that's what the vertical, the article in Vulture, it talks about it being a safe space. And I hate that I use that word now because I feel like safe space is misused. It seems like now safe space is do what I say or we're done space. So Killer Unicorns, I don't want to call it a safe space. It's a space where you can be who you want to be. So if you want to talk about Donald Trump and you love Donald Trump, you can do that and not be killed. You know, I mean, now I'm not saying I voted for Donald Trump, but I'm just saying, like, we believe in, again, I'm a libertarian, so I believe in freedom of speech. Some people think that's very, quote, dangerous, but I think it's a good thing because the second we start cutting off other people's viewpoints and we start cutting off conversations, it's just dangerous territory. I mean, I almost became a criminal psychologist, and I've also studied sociology. I minored in, you know, cultural studies. I mean, it's what's happening right now is scary. And so for me, Killer Unicorn is just a place where, you know, really talented comedians. I've had people from New York, Canada, the UK. They've been on the late night shows. A lot of them have been on TV. You know, they're good comics. I've had a few that were disrespectful, but I would say 99.9% have been amazing.
That's awesome. And so you've been running that for 4 years, you said? And how long have you been doing comedy overall?
Since I dipped my toes in 2015, but I didn't really start and like really hardcore start until I think more 2016. I think I gained more confidence in 2016.
What made you want to get on stage in the first place?
Well, I've always been on stage. I'm from Chicago, so I have a musical background, theater, Rent, and you know, all the other things. And I moved out to LA thinking, you know, I want to do film and I want to do TV and I want to do commercials. And the fact was, and you can read this in a lot of my articles if you Google me, the fact of the matter was, is that I was a fish out of water. I didn't have the TV resume. I didn't have the headshots. I didn't have the, it's a very different world, theater and film. And so when I came out here, I didn't have a good resume to even get an agent. I was going on independent auditions with no agent. I was, you know, obviously very poor. I was lost. I always had, you know, some kind of wacky roommate. You know, like LA's a weird place. And I started to feel lost. And then I decided to just kind of take a break. I was like, maybe you just need to do some meditating and yoga. So for like a couple months, I just took a break. And I met this girl, and we're friends to this day. And I reference her in an article. She's so sweet. Like I said, we're still friends to this day. I'm a lesbian, if that wasn't clear to anyone. Sorry on the show. I'm not sorry for being gay, but I apologize for not making that clear. But I was dating her, and I saw how like close-knit the comedy community seemed to be. And comedy had always been something that ran in my family growing up. Like I said, I'm Greek and I'm from Chicago, and I had, you know, my mom, my dad, and my younger brother, and we were always watching Saturday Night Live. My mom was always doing, you know, Roseanne, Roseanne, Dana from, you know, Saturday Night Live with Gilda Radner years and years and years ago. And we were watching John Candy in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. And I mean, John Belushi, like the comedians and the culture I grew up in Chicago, comedy was always around. And being kind of a loudmouth, you know, Greek woman, you know, I surely didn't, you know, fit in as some demure, you know, secretary. Not that I'm dissing secretaries by any mean. My life would be a lot more simple if I was. But But I just saw the comedy thread that had always been in me. That had all it had always been a theme. Like if things got hard, you know, say at home or at school, or I mean, I was just always kind of joking around. Like I would just spew things out and my friends would laugh and be like, Julia, that's so funny. And to me it wasn't funny. I was just like, no, this is just my life and it's freaking obnoxious, or I'm really agitated, or why did this bad thing happen to me? And I don't understand. Like it comedy became a way to cope. It became a way to deal with the everyday noise of life. And I decided then that I wanted to try it, that I wanted to get on and go up and try stand up. So I did.
Do you remember your first mic?
I 100% do.
Okay, where was it?
It was in Silver Lake.
Okay.
The place has shut down and I don't remember the name because I was so nervous, and at the time I was smoking cigarettes again. I've been a smoker on and off for many years. Currently off for about three now.
Good.
And
Nice.
yeah. And oh my gosh, I was so nervous and I thought, who's gonna listen? Like, of course I'd been on stage, but I was like, who's gonna listen? Like, who's gonna listen to me? What am I gonna do? Like, it was just I and my best guy friend from college was with me. It was just me and him. And we went and it was just like, okay, you just gotta do it. It's only 3 minutes. 3 minutes is like nothing. Like you'll sneeze and it'll be over. And I was petrified. I get up, I do it, people laugh, and before you know it, I'm getting the light to get off stage. And I was like, oh my God, like this is it. This is what I've meant to be doing the whole time. And I never knew.
Did you, for your first mic, were you one of the ones that like went up with nothing? Did you like write for weeks? What did you do before
Trying to think.
it?
No, I didn't go up with nothing because I was like, I was determined. I'm a perfectionist. I'm a type A.
Okay.
You've seen my Instagram, so I'm sure that you probably get a sense of some kind of something in there. But like, I was, you know, the eldest daughter in a Greek family, second generation immigrant. So, you know, things were expected to be a certain way in my home. We were taught certain family values, and you were taught not to be unprepared. I'll tell you that. So, you know, I didn't go in there drunk. I had some ideas. I don't know if I wrote out a complete set. I don't think I did that because I've never done that. In fact, I improv almost all of my sets, which people freak out when they hear that because they're like, what are you talking about? But I just thought of some stories and said, okay, these are the stories I'm going to tell.
Okay.
Hopefully they work. And they did. Like I just went up, I told the story, and then I just looped the joke in to the like the story was the joke. So it just hit, and that was it. And then I was like, okay, well, that's it. I did two open mics and I started doing shows after that. I only did two open mics and I started working after that.
Oh my gosh. So you were made for this.
I think I was made for entertainment. I don't know about the culture. I mean, the comedy c community is really getting, I mean, things, I don't want to say the comedy community, but things in LA are getting weird. And
Yeah.
freedom of speech now, in my opinion, has become something that can be dangerous. You can be outcasted. You could be blacklisted. You could be called a racist comedian. You could be called anything for no reason, just because you disagree with the mainstream at this point.
Yeah.
So to me, I don't know if I was made to be a comedian or if I was made to be more of a public speaker. I think comedian, but if comedians are only going to think a certain way, which I know not all comedians do. I know yeah. there's tons of comedians that think differently. But right now, where we are, I mean, I'm in LA. I believe you are too.
Yeah, I'm Riverside.
Okay, so you're here.
Yeah.
You're here. Yeah. And, you know, it's, I'm not going to name which side or any side because, again, libertarians, we're not Democrats and we're not Republicans. But to me, both sides have lost their minds. And I'm not riding either crazy train. So that's where I'm at. That's where I'm at with that. But yes, I think I was absolutely made to be in the entertainment industry. No doubt. I have a strong opinion. I've learned to be able to combat, you know, anything from defamation to gossip to nonsense to slander. I mean, I've been bullied. I've been through it all. And you hit an age. I'm deep in the threes. It's part of a joke of mine. But you hit an age when you stop caring, you know. And also you become so strong and so you love yourself enough to know that what other crazy people say or do doesn't matter. Yeah. It just doesn't.
Well, and okay, so you bring up the fact that you're part of entertainment, and I was looking at your, like, resume of everything, and I love that it's, like, comedian, storyteller, actor, model, and activist. And I know I always see a lot of activism on your pages.
Yes. I've always been a truth seeker, and when I was younger, in high school, I said, Mom, and, you know, I grew up in a suburb of Chicago, so it was very diverse. It was not whitewashed. We had Jewish, black kids, white kids. It was the rainbow. The only thing, interestingly enough, that was not accepted in my town was gay or transgender.
Okay.
Understanding, remember, though, I went to high school in the 90s.
Yeah.
So that was a different time.
Yes.
But everything else was pretty well accepted. But one day I said, Mom, I see that mostly black kids hang out with black kids and mostly white kids hang out with white kids. I said, why? She said, I'm not going to try to explain it to you. So she sent me off to this adult seminar class for months on top of my advanced placement psychology schooling in high school
mm-hmm.
called Healing Racism. And I was the first teenager in the world, not nation, in the world to ever take it. And then not only did I take the two courses, I was then trained to teach it. So when people ask me things like, what do you think about Black Lives Matter? It's like, don't even ask. Of course Black Lives Matter. Like I have been fighting this out of the womb, you know? Like, it's something to me that, like, there will be no injustices in front of my face because I will be the first to call it out and take it down. So whatever's happening, whether it's, you know, we're going to lie or we're going to try to hurt a certain group or we're going to, and it doesn't matter what group it is. I mean, it could be anything. It's not just one thing. I have been, I think, an activist of the truth and of justice.
Awesome. So your family being in Chicago, I'm assuming they're still out there, right?
Yeah.
Have any of them seen you do comedy? Any of your stand-up?
My father is my biggest fan.
Aw.
He is a fan. He has seen my comedy. He looks everything up. He watches my websites. Yes. I have a lot of friends who think I'm famous because when you Google me, a lot comes up. Some interesting things come up too, which we can always talk about because I think it's really important, to be authentic as a comedian.
Absolutely.
And to not gloss over, difficult, things and things that are scary and hard and things that we've overcome. And when you Google, so a lot of, you know, small town, they think, oh, you're famous. And you know, it's like, no, we all are still on food stamps. Just kidding. Sort of. But, you know, like, I think I have a lot of, I have fans in my hometown and my friends are very supportive. My mother too, very supportive. I've also had cousins and, you know, great old uncles, like, when are we going to see you on the Tonight Show? You know, like, just, so it's funny. I went to Topanga just to camp in my SUV, just to kind of get away from things. And I had a fan in Topanga. I had no makeup on. My hair hadn't been done for months. She was like, can we get a selfie? And I was like, how the fuck did this even happen? Like,
that's awesome.
I'm not famous though. Like, I'm not Julia Roberts. You know what I mean? So I find myself walking this bizarre fine line of the tipping point.
Uh-huh.
Like, I'm not there, but something keeps pulling me closer to there. And signs just keep popping up all over the place of, like, I did this indie film. And it's won over 70 awards worldwide. And I never thought that was going to happen. I mean, just stuff is just, and of course, it was a comedic role. I played, like, the dumb blonde friend. So it just really kind of exploded.
That's amazing.
Sorry if I got on a tangent, but it just was like,
no, it's fine. I'm all about just however it genuinely happens. So tangents are 100% allowed.
You're sweet. You're patient. I appreciate it.
That's the mom and the teacher in me coming out.
The macrame. What is that? Beautiful. Well, I'm saying it wrong. How do you pronounce
macrame?
It? It's beautiful.
So, you know, okay. So this is, we're talking about reading. I am such a nerd. I get a book club subscription and they send a book and then there's like a couple gifts that are like wrapped up. And when you get to a certain page in the book, it says like, open this gift. And it's like something that's relating to whatever they're reading. So sometimes it'll be like tea if the character's drinking tea. And in the book that I got that one from, she had a macrame wall hang.
Oh.
So that's how I got, I had to read to get to it. But yeah, no, I'm an avid reader, so.
That's great. God, I'm so, I don't like using the word jealous because I think jealousy is such a waste of energy, but I'm so in awe. And I look up to people who are readers. I do. Like, people who are avid readers, I'm very appreciative of the fact that their brains can do something that I can't. See, I love diversity. I love debating. I love differences. You know, when people get so mad about people having other opinions, even though I'm an activist, I feel I'm an activist for love and for understanding and compassion. And absolutely. I think people sometimes thinks activist means it's just one-sided. And, yeah. You know, you can still be an activist and understand the other side. You don't have to condemn or hate people.
Best way to be an activist is to understand the other side, or at least attempt to understand the other side.
I 100% agree with that. There's a lot of people who I think are just so extremist nowadays, but I am so glad that you articulated what I could, because that's exactly what I was trying to say.
No, absolutely. Exactly. Yeah, I think it's such an important part. And I think actually that understanding both sides is important even in comedy. I think because it lets you look at something
so
much more
whole. Where have you been? Seriously, I completely see and I agree. And the fact that it's like, well, let's cancel this one side, I just can't get on board with. And it's not because I'm a racist, Stephanie. It's because I believe in free speech. And the only way to learn and to change things is to allow each party to speak.
Okay.
I
actually, that brings up, now we're going down a debate path. So we're at least.
I feel bad. We're not going to.
No, no, it's fine. Because it's important, actually. Because, like, how do you feel about comics that, like, lose opportunities because of something they tweeted 10 years before?
I think that is 100% wrong.
Okay.
I think that is, if we all sat around and dug up our histories, then we would all be canceled.
Oh, absolutely.
So if we're going to start digging up histories, I feel bad that I'm not videoing you because I thought it wasn't a video. So I feel bad that I'm looking, that you don't have anything to look at. I feel terrible. I just whipped my damn sweatshirt off because I'm so hot. But what I was going to say is I'm so glad you're bringing this up because if the world is all one thing, what's the point? Do you know what I mean? If we all only have just like, we all love pink. Great. Where's the diversity in that? Like, isn't diversity supposed to be about like understanding each side or trying or you don't have to agree or endorse or support or enable or.
One of my biggest pet peeves is when somebody's like, oh, we disagree on this one thing. Now we hate each other. And it's like, that's not how it works.
Right. Now that's very confusing to me. And I'm very confused as to why people do that.
Yeah. It's like you disagree and it's like, oh, we can no longer be family. And it's like, that's. You're supposed to be able to have discourse. You're supposed to be able to talk about things and being like, oh, okay. I can add that. So that way you can find the best solution. And I think everybody's so one-sided, we don't find it.
Well, what happened to like healthy debates or healthy disagreements or healthy, like I said, I almost became a criminal psychologist. So from my point of view, you know, when people are like, this one side is all right, this one side is all wrong, I'm like, that's disgusting. Like, the hashtag yes all men being rapists.
Oh,
that's disturbing and disgusting, and I 100% would never stand by something like that.
Oh, absolutely.
And people have no problem hashtagging yes all men, believe all women. I have been, if you've read anything, I have been a victim myself of domestic violence with other women. And in October 2016, I outed my female abuser. I'm sorry, it was 2018.
Okay.
We had dated from 2015 to 2016. We'd had no contact in 3 years. And it was at the peak of the Me Too movement. And I was challenging feminists, saying, if you're going to say that, yes, all men are rapists and you're all outing these men, then I'm going to out this woman who you keep booking on shows and continue saying is a good person and she's not. And the only reason you continue to book her and not listen to me is because I'm a woman. And if you read the post, it's very political. It's a political outcry for change. That heteronormative abuse cannot be hyper-focused on, ignoring the fact that lesbians are in the number one bracket for domestic violence. Yep, no one knows that. I have done extensive studies. That was also part of one of my minors, was queer theory and gender studies.
Okay.
So a lot of people choose to ignore facts. And I, like I said at the beginning of this, you know, I'm a truth finder and I'm an activist for the truth and for justice and for things to be right. And she, instead of suing me, pretty simple. Suing is not simple, but what happens if you feel you're being defamed, which she felt as though she was being defamed, you sue someone in civil court.
Yeah.
But she knew that I had evidence to prove that wrong, so she wouldn't win a civil suit. So she had friends coach her into writing up a trumped up restraining order, and a judge who is also corrupt, who I will be campaigning against. I think his reelection is coming up soon. And he's in the lower level courts. He wasn't even a judge when he made the decision. He had six decisions overturned in less than a year and a half, which shows how corrupt he is. So two sociopaths got together, and then I had a mob of women in Los Angeles come after my career and tried to have me canceled.
Oh my gosh.
I fought back with an attorney. I appealed the restraining order. My lawyer stepped in and took control of the chaos. We won the appeal. I am now working on a book deal, a movie deal, and we'll be talking to major media news markets about what happened to me.
Oh, wow.
So my abuser, she is still out there. The name is right on the thing, so you can read it and look her up. She's still out there running around, running her mouth, still still after losing, which it's interesting. My lawyer, I believe, referred to her as truly evil and wicked. And Ted Bundy was referred to as evil and wicked. So we need to start really paying attention here and stop hyper-focusing on what's the biggest, flashiest mob situation we can all jump on now. Because shame on all those women who said, I believed you. And then when my ex-abuser went and got that illegal injunction placed upon me for freedom of speech on my own private Facebook account, that is so wrong. And thank God that the law was changed, because I don't know if you how much you read, but a law professor requested it for it to be case law so it can never happen to anyone else again, ever, ever. It's now being taught at UCLA by mm-hmm. Eugene Volk, who is one of the most prestigious law professors in the world. It's being taught by Eugene Kaplan at Loyola in California as well.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yes. So I am indeed a very much social justice warrior. I'm not just someone who talks a game. My parents and I went into very severe debt fighting this to make sure this never happened to anyone else. It wasn't just about my reputation mm-hmm. and getting the restraining order off my record. It was about the truth. And the truth was published by a woman justice who's about 20 times higher up than the man who wrote the injunction upon me in the first place. So that's the story. And that's how I feel about cancel culture. Sorry, I know that was a lot, but...
No, it's fine.
I really feel safe enough to speak with you about these things. Mm-hmm. Some people I will not. Some people I will. Because I laid very low until I won. And I won in March 2020.
Oh, or wow.
No. March 20, it took a year and a half to go through, which is awful, right? You have to just, yeah. you just have to, like when you talk about a mental warrior, when people are calling you names and trying to ruin you, you have to have a faith. And you have to have a love so strong. And I'm not talking narcissistic. I'm saying you've got to find a place in yourself where you can hold on, because there were nights of, Dad, I want to die. Mm. There were nights of, I'm going to walk in front of a bus. There were nights of, how can I go on? And like I said, every single woman that told me that they believed me when I say, you know, bravely outed this abusive woman turned against me. And that right there in and of itself is absolutely not just horrific, but frightening. It's disturbing because yeah. they could do it to anyone. They could turn, well, they'll turn on each other eventually. That's yeah. what mobs do. So I wanted you to hear that story because it's very imperative just to the cancel culture. And I have literally lived it. And It is a dramatic story, and it's not funny, and it's, you know, there are many lies. There's a lot of defamation in there, mm-hmm. but that's what happens sometimes when you tell the truth. You know, when women try to tell the truth about, you know, their, let's say, male rapist, and mm-hmm. they'll come after them and try to kill them. Yeah. She just did it in a different way.
Well, and I know you say it's not funny, but it's part of who you are, and then that leads in and translates to all of the other stuff, like the activism is part of your comedy as well and all of that. And it's definitely not a funny story, but it does lend itself to who you are, and who you are is then impacted with who you are on stage.
Totally. Yeah. And you know what, a lot of my jokes are actually starting to come from it too, because mm-hmm. of the hypocrisy. And It's actually, I'm able to joke about it now. I wasn't in 2019 because, you know, that's when it was happening.
You're but, in it.
Yeah, I was in it. But now, and especially since I've won, it's been really funny. And I have found a strength inside of myself that I never would have had I not gone through this. Yeah. Never.
I think, yeah, some of the craziest things that have happened to me have been like some of the stuff that's given me the most strength when I go back to it. And so
I agree.
It in there. I know. I because I did the same thing. Like, I have stuff like going through divorce and things like that. And so it's like there's certain things I can't talk about. And you find that and you're like, okay, this is was traumatic when I was there. And now I look back and I'm like, oh, I'm grateful for this. And I'm happy that turned.
Yep.
Now I can joke about it.
Absolutely. And it's that's so great that you are such a positive person to see that. Because I think a lot of people want to take whatever pain they've been through and use it to be a victim. I'm not saying everyone.
Yeah.
But it's become some kind of a trend that it's like trendy to be a victim and to expect other people to take responsibility for our lives when we are the ones who create our destiny, mm-hmm. no one else. We are the ones who choose to love or choose to destroy. We are the ones. No one else can, you know, those girls could have said whatever they said. My abuser did what she did, but I had a choice. Mm-hmm. I could have become a bad, angry woman.
Yeah.
And instead, I fought and became an activist so this could never happen to anyone ever again.
Absolutely. Never. And I think that's amazing.
Sweet. Thank you. I really appreciate, I appreciate you listening and giving me this platform.
Of course.
Because it will eventually be out public, very public. But I have started talking about it slowly to prep myself.
Of course.
Because I will be interviewed and I will be, you know, like we've been talking to Showtime. We've been talking to HBO. I mean, I've got to be ready for when it explodes because with the re-election, I mean, it's just the perfect storm.
Of course.
And girl against girl crime is never talked about. And now it will be.
Of course. I did also want to talk about, I know you sent me a video, I think it was from about a year ago, of jokes as well. And so you brought up something earlier and I kind of wrote it down because I was like, I cannot forget this.
Yeah.
You said you improv most of the time you're on stage.
Yes.
So the jokes that you sent me, are they jokes that, like, you've used, it's kind of like, or is it, like, once you use a joke, you never use it again? How does that work?
No. So here's how I do it. I think of jokes just from living. I don't sit at a desk and think I need to pick a subject and write about it. I just think of stories. I consider myself a storytelling stand-up, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
Because
my
stand-up is based off of stories. I mean, and not a lot of people, you know, some people do, some people don't. Everyone has their style, and that's just my style. I wish I could be a one-liner comic. I'm not. But here's what I do. I have what I call a bank.
Okay.
And I have a bank of jokes that I've been doing, you know, let's say I started in 2015, 2016. So I've been doing comedy for really only, I mean, I took 2019 off, you mm-hmm. know, I did shows, but I was very under the radar and that was very intentional because I consider myself classy, not trashy. And I didn't want to be facing bullies and people who had done illegal things to me in public places. And so instead I hyper-focused on acting and I succeeded in that realm. So it was okay to take a little time off. And in fact, I actually mentally felt healthier after the time off. But going back to your question, I have a bank. And so there's like, for example, my mom and her uterus.
I went home for Christmas and she sat me down at the table like the night I flew in. And she goes, Jay, I just wanted to let you know that my uterus is falling out. Like what? Like that happens, an organ just flies out of your body? And she's like, well, you know, it could be from like childbirth. So later that night, I go to my computer and I'm Googling like uterus falling out of your shit. You know what I mean? And I'm seeing these pictures and I'm like, freaking out. This is scary. Now, you guys have to understand something. I'm Greek and I'm from Chicago. I've seen a lot of shit. But this was frightening. Okay, it was frightening. So I run to my mom the next morning. I'm like, Mom, what are you doing? Like, this is some serious, like, I saw the pictures. This is no joke. Like, what are you doing? She's like, my doctor's out of town. But it's not a big deal. I just shove it right back in and pull my girdle up. I just shove it right back in. Years of therapy, years of medication, years of negative relationships, thanks to my mother. My therapist is my screensaver. Because every time I look down at my phone, I want to see her face looking back up at me saying, how do you want to feel after this interaction? I want to feel better.
Yes.
That joke always hits. And it always hits at the time when I say, so I went home and I started Googling uterus falling out of your shit. Like, so I always know, like, in my brain, there is a bank where if something, let's say I'm improvising a new story that happened to me, or I'm talking about the evil witches who tried to, you know, ruin my livelihood, or whatever it is that I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Let's say it starts to not go well with the crowd. You know what I mean? Like on a first date, you're like, ooh, this is not working. I somehow find a way, and I can't tell you my formula. I just do it to segue from whatever it is that's not working to either mom's uterus, my uterus, things that hit and I know work.
Got it.
In my bank. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I like that joke. I love it because, like, you're even just like shove it right back in. And it's just like everything that you're doing, the and unfortunately I don't send the video when I put up this stuff, but it's like you're just the whole movement. It's a very like physical, like, and not physical joke, but you're very physical while doing it.
Yes. Yes. I'm definitely physical on stage. I think a lot of people when they, you know, they get up and they like sit and they hold the mic and they kind of stand. Mm-hmm. I'm not that comic. If you watch my YouTube stuff, I am moving a lot. There have been times where I have like literally laid on stage. I use the stage for sure, like I did when I was in Chicago for like theatrical musicals, all of it. Definitely.
Awesome.
I can't just stand.
It's so funny to watch. Like, I love it when I'm like watching a show and you have a comic that's very animated and all over the place, and they're like followed by somebody who just stands there, and it's just like, it always is such a good jarring jump for me. But I love it. But it just cracks me up.
It's so weird how different the styles are and how they work and how they don't work and how they work. And I learned very quickly because a lot of women kind of are doing the deadpan, and I don't do dead. I am the complete opposite of deadpan. I am the complete opposite of deadpan. So, and I'm not dissing them for the deadpan. It works for a lot of people. You know how they're like, yeah, my life is black. Yeah. You know what I mean? And then they just stand there with like a sad look on their face. That will never be Julia Pell's.
I'm pretty giggly, I think. Pretty joyful, I think, on stage. I'm goofy naturally. Yeah. So, like, or hyper right now. I'm kind of stoned, so.
Well, I would love to have you on Killer Unicorn.
I would love to.
Absolutely love to. I can tell just by talking to you because I do have a psychology. I think a lot of comedians are like, fuck her psychology background, because I just don't put up with a lot of crap.
Yeah.
I don't put up with a lot of crap, especially after the court stuff and all that. I have stepped into a different, you know, I think we all have to learn our power, and I don't mean power in a any kind of negative way. I mean, we have to step into our own womanhood, our own adulthood, and I think it took me a long time to do that. Because of childhood trauma. I'm very open about that. I've also spoken of mental health, suicide attempt in college. I'm very open about mm-hmm. who I am because I feel as though authenticity is what keeps us in reality and what also keeps us connected to each other. And I just feel, you know, I could be talking about, I don't know, something that maybe not really that funny on stage, mm-hmm. but it's the way I'm executing it, you know, that makes it funny. And a lot of the stuff is, I mean, I don't think I've ever been like, so I went to 7-Eleven, you know what I mean? Like, I don't write those jokes.
Mm-hmm.
Did I answer your question? See, this is me rambling.
You're here fine. I love rambling because I feel like if you let people ramble sometimes, you'll hear stuff that they might not have intended to say, but meant to say.
I love that. I love that.
I do it with my students because you learn so much about people when they ramble.
Right, because it's almost like stream of consciousness. It's almost like being a psychologist because you're hearing them talk.
Yes.
Yeah, I can tell you're so grounded. Your energy is so grounded.
Thank you.
And I say that as an anxious person.
You know what's funny is I'm actually a really high anxiety person. But I've learned just to kind of be like, okay, I know I'm going to panic, but okay, what can I control? Like, can I try to focus on like the stuff I can?
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's funny, like, I definitely have anxiety, but I, through therapies, and I'm a huge advocate for therapy.
Yeah.
And huge. And medication if needed, and mm-hmm. hospital stays if needed. I think the stigmatism in that is ridiculous.
Absolutely.
If you had cancer, you would get chemo. If you have schizophrenia, you know, you take a pill. It's mm-hmm. just what it is. Or, you know, homeopathic, whatever is most comfortable for the individual. I'm not going to force anything.
Yeah.
That's wrong, obviously. But you get what I'm saying. And I just, I don't know, comedy is just, I always say, like, I'm going to marry comedy, or comedy is my first love, or comedy is my, I really appreciate it when people, what I love about, I've lived a lot of places too. I've lived in Illinois. I've lived in Ohio. I've lived in the state of Washington and Seattle. I've mm-hmm. lived in Los Angeles, 4 states and 6 cities. And because I've lived in a couple cities in Illinois and a couple cities in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like no matter where you go, people are people are people are people are mm-hmm. people. And I just hope that as comedians, we can bridge this gap of separatism that has formed mm-hmm. at this point in our country. That is my hope.
Yeah.
I don't know where that came from. I think I've just been feeling it. And I really hope we can get back to that because I feel like there's a lot of dividing going on right now.
Yes. It's almost inevitable right now. And it's my kids. It's really weird. My kids are mixed, and my daughter at 9 is becoming aware of all these things. And she was like, wait a minute. Like, oh my gosh, what is there's a movie and it's about the
Mercy
No, it's the one where they get married. And then there's like it's like the black woman and the white guy and they get married.
Yes. Yep. Yep, the when Virginia passed, like the love for Virginia. Yep, yeah. I don't know the name, but yes,
I'm like completely blanking on it right now. But she was watching that, like the trailer came up for it, and she's like, "Wait a minute!" Like, there's this, and so like she saw that, and then she started like paying attention, and she's like, "Okay, when I'm with my dad, I see people do this, and their dad is white," and then she's like, "But when I'm with you, I see people do this," and so it's really interesting to see such a young perspective on how separate everything is.
Interesting.
So
does she feel like, is she light, if you don't mind me asking, is she lighter skinned? Does she feel discriminated against at school?
She's lighter skinned, and not so much that she's actually, the school that we're at, the majority is either Caucasian or Asian.
Oh.
And so she's Hispanic with curly hair, and she's like, comes home and she's like, everybody has a lot of questions because they don't understand why we do this or this. And I'm like, I was like, babe, at the very bottom of everything, you're American. We don't do any traditions from our culture because my family's been here for so long.
Right.
And so I'm like, you are the epitome of what American is. I'm like, that's all I can say.
Right.
And
right.
So it's been interesting.
I mean, I also hope that we can start steering away again. And, you know, I don't want to make it about politics. I used to be the least political comedian you probably would ever meet. But mm-hmm. I hope that we can start seeing the media for what it is, too, because the media is lying to us.
Mm-hmm.
I think in a lot of ways. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist at all. I'm watching one video and then someone sends me another video and it's a completely different angle and it's completely different. It's really weird.
I was just thinking about it. I really don't like the term conspiracy theory. I think I'm against it.
I might be too. I think it's my real theory. Or maybe it's not a theory. Like maybe it's an actual fact. Do you know what I mean? Like
I think like as soon as you say something like, oh, it's just a conspiracy theory, it's like anybody who subscribes to it without like there's no facts that need to be looked into, just anybody who agrees with it is crazy. And so it stops people from having a conversation.
I agree. You know what? I agree with that. And I again, going back, when did being a victim, and I'm not saying that all, we've all been victim to things, sexual yeah. harassment, sexual abuse, verbal abuse. I mean, I don't know one person who's getting out of this life unscathed.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel as humans, but as women, we should be saying we're strong, we're empowered, we can do all these things. You know, I always get these questions like, so tell me how you're treated in the industry as a woman. And I'm like, I'm treated just fine. Mm-hmm. Like I mean, I'm not saying that I haven't had weird shit go on in my life, but again, things aren't always matching what I'm experiencing to what I'm hearing in the news to what I'm seeing. If that makes sense,
yeah.
Like I'm experiencing things and then I'm hearing things and then I'm like, is this true? I think it's a confusing time even for people like myself who I have a very strong sense of self.
Mm-hmm.
It's confusing because when the media starts to lie to you, who can you trust?
Well, yeah.
You know, that's when it gets really weird. It's like
the basis of every dystopian
is, well, or like, why are health companies endorsing Republican things or Democratic things? That should have nothing to do with, I mean, like part of it should, I guess, but like, see, this again goes back to me being a libertarian. I don't want the government's hands in my shit. Like, mm-hmm. I believe in being an independent and then you get supported. Like yeah. they don't need to be all up in our everything. I think we need more independent lives. That's all. That's all I'm going to say. And drink Coca-Cola. No, don't. It's bad for your teeth. Okay.
But it's really good for cleaning your car. So it's fine.
Is it really?
Yep. I've seen all these videos of people using Coke to clean like the headlights.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like it'll make them clear again.
Oh,
I haven't tested it. I need to test it.
I'm gonna Google that.
Yeah,
I'm excited. I'm excited. You told me. Yes.
There you go. So you talk. One of the things I think it's just okay. You say your family is fans of yours. I'll find words again. I lost him for a second there. But so your family's big fans of you. You talk a lot about sex on stage. How do they feel about that? Because I know, like, you talk even about. Having a pregnancy scare and being a lesbian and all of the jokes along those.
I had some news not too long ago that wasn't very exciting. I had a pregnancy scare, which might not be that big of a deal, except for the fact that I'm a lesbian. It was a bigger deal than I thought. So I went to my therapist, and I was like, Bonnie, if I'm a lesbian, why do I keep having sex with men? And here's the thing, it's not bisexual, guys. I know you're thinking, oh, she's just a bisexual. No, I did that in high school, I did that in college, and when I sleep with men, I just close my eyes, I bend over and pretend like it's a lesbian with a strap on. So no, I'm not a bisexual. We figured it out, though, it's totally Freudian, because my dad's like Deepak Chopra, and my mom's a psychotic bitch.
Yeah. Yeah, and like some of the bending over.
Yes.
Like yeah. One of my new things since I'm, you know, deep in my 30s is I want to slip and fall on a dick.
Yes.
I don't know how my dad. I don't know how my dad watches those things.
Yeah.
I don't know if he does watch those things.
Okay.
My mom finds everything comical because she's herself.
Yeah.
We'll leave it there since this will be publicly airing. God love her. God rest her heart. Love you, Mary. Love you. Miss you. Wish you were here. Moved across the country for no good reason. Just kidding. But I don't know how most – I've not gotten any blowback for being – anything. I have not, in fact, I don't even think I've ever been heckled on stage in the never that I've been performing. It's like I say things that I think if a white man said, people wouldn't listen to it. Mm-hmm. But because I'm this teeny little lesbian, I mean, you've seen me. I go up mm-hmm. and I talk about things that I think are very faux pas in some realms. Like, you don't say that women, you know, are fucks. Women are great. We're mm-hmm. all on the same team, right?
Yeah.
No. And there's me being like, I love men. I just want to slip on a dick and eat a pizza. You know, like, it's very avant-garde. It's very, I think people see me and they think something's going to come out of my mouth. And they're like, whoa, the complete opposite thing just came out of that woman's mouth.
Absolutely.
She looks like a preppy girl next door, straight for sure. You know, and she's talking about wanting to have sex with men, but she's not a bisexual, but she's got these mommy issues, which contributes to her relationship issues, which if anyone was to roast me, the first thing that would go down would be like, has Julia been to jail yet? Like for, you know, for women issues, because, you know, I dated men from 13 to 23 and never had one issue, not one. And then I started dating women. And it was a completely different ballgame that I was not prepared for. I think on many levels. And I think it's funny. I think my life is funny. I think there's a lot of tragedy in it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's where the funny lies. It's like, oh my God, has this woman really been through this? This is ridiculous. This is stupid. Like, why is she... What? Like, did that really happen? And then it becomes funny because of how absurd it is. Did I answer your question?
Every
time I'm like, did I answer your question?
No, you're
if anyone it. Listens to this podcast, they're going to be like, wow, that Julia Pell is really dumb.
No, it's, like I said, it's actually the ones I think I get the most positive feedback are like when you just hear a comic say it all.
Yeah, no, it's funny because my parent, I mean, I've luckily gotten no blowback from the sexual talk. Mm. I love your questions, by the way. You are one of the best interviewees I've done probably like 50 podcasts, and you have been by far one of the best interviewers. I'm not saying it right again. Here we go. Looking very inarticulate, looking very unprofessional.
You're good.
Really, I'm like, wow, she really did her research. Like, she's looked into me. She didn't just have me on and then just whatever. You know what I mean? It's like, you don't care if I'm on or not. You just needed a guest. You know, this is really fun. I appreciate you. Yeah. And this is great.
I started doing this podcast because I love comedy. I love the why comics write, what gets them to want to go on stage, what their purpose is, and all of that stuff. And so I genuinely want to know. So it's like, I ask people that I want to hear about. So that's my goal.
I love it. I love this. This is really one of, I've never done a podcast. I feel like, I feel like people ask me questions about myself, but it's, I don't know if they'd want to know, or they're just like, these are routine questions. We need to, you know, what made you become a comedian? You know what I mean? I get that question all the time.
Yeah.
Which is totally fine. You have to know that. But like, your questions are extremely diverse. You have to ask the basics. You have to. But yours are like really, I'm like, oh, she actually like did some research. It's nice to know that not all people don't research things. Not everyone's a lazy piece of shit. Oh, did I say that? Sorry, it's 9 o'clock and it's day 1,000 of quarantine. Too bad.
Yeah, it's fine. No, I appreciate that. Like I said, I learn from all the different comics, and I like when the world is open, I usually run shows, and I do it because I love comedy and I love to be around it. And I'm a type A person also, so I don't know if you can tell.
I can.
So, yeah.
I can. So. Well, you're very organized. And I felt terrible. I was like, I literally told my friend, I said, I rescheduled on this woman 3 times. I said, and now I'm at the DMV and I'm pushing the time back. I said, she is going to say, yeah, Julia's really nice, but she's so unprofessional to work with. And it's so funny because I am the last person to, like, when I used to do comedy shows, I would literally be like, have to be on a deathbed to cancel, like not getting paid, I was like, I promise I'm on the lineup, where anyone else would have been like, I'm sick, I'm going to bed, like I have to take care of myself. I'd be like, no, like not to get other people sick, but like, I just never want to be high maintenance, rude, disrespectful, inconsiderate of other people's time. Again, I believe in taking personal responsibility. I don't believe in making excuses and being irresponsible. So I do appreciate, and I'll say this publicly, I do appreciate you being flexible in this time of COVID. Yeah. And a lot of weird things happen, including my dad, who's my number one supporter, having some heart problems. We talked about.
But he's doing okay, right?
Yes, he's doing really good. He's really excited and wants to come out and see comedy. And I'm like, Dad, hold your horses, buddy. You just had some heart stuff going on. You can see it in a little bit when you're better.
Like, oh my
gosh. Get on Zoom, buddy.
Well, and I get the not wanting to cancel. I think I've only canceled on one show, and I had like 103 fever and I was hallucinating. So it's like, I shouldn't drive anywhere. Like, I'm going to be like freaking out thinking I'm driving next to a narwhal. And so...
I love you.
That didn't happen.
Right? You're like, this is to the detriment of other people.
Like, I'm going to run into somebody's going to die. So I didn't go. Like, even I went, I had a show. I found out I had cancer and I had a show and I did the show. And on stage, I talk about having cancer. And I remember, like, after the show, one of the comics, they're like, oh my gosh, when did you find out? And I'm like, 4 hours ago. And he's like, okay, I'm going to buy you a beer. Like, I'm like, okay, that sounds great. But... like, so I get that, like, life happens, and I'm just such, like, I'm so anal, but, like, I am never upset if, like, life happens. If you just, like, stand me up, then I'd be like, well, this person's a bitch, but you didn't do that. You always hit me.
I'm the same way. It's funny. Even though I'm so type A, I hold myself to a higher standard. Like, if you had to reschedule with me 3 times, I would have been, like, totally chilled. No worries. Like, it's COVID. I get it. Oh, yeah, your dad. Oh, yeah. Like, my standard for myself is much higher.
I don't think is
a good thing. I think I need to step up my standards for others, because who you hang out with is a reflection of you. You know, water seeks its own level, and I had to learn that the hard way. You know, I'm starting to hold people to higher standards. It's like, look, you don't want me to waste your time. Like, now if someone says, like, you know, I'm sorry, or, you know, says in advance, like, this is what's happening. As long as someone tells me what's up, we're good. As long as you tell me what's going on.
Yeah.
That's all. You know.
I'm very transparent, so I appreciated the transparency when everything was going on.
And I'm so relieved that he's okay. That was scary.
No,
that threw me for a loop.
I can't even imagine. Like, I was like, no, take that priority. I do, and it doesn't seem like it's been an hour. We've actually been recording for an hour, and I have one more question that I really want to ask you.
Yes, and I was just going to say, I'm so sorry that I talk so much.
No, it's fine.
Because we were going to take 45 minutes, and now I'm like, oh my God, I'm so sorry.
It's like 40, I always say approximately, and then I try just not to go over like an hour and a half.
Totally. No, totally. I'm so glad that you got to ask all your questions. I want to answer all your questions.
But yeah, no, the main question that the last one I have is, and I ask this one across the board, is what's your end game in comedy? What is the thing you want out of this that you want to see from it that you want to be able to influence? What is your end game?
Just took a hike today, like 3-mile hike with my work wife. Maggie Mayfield is my work wife. She's amazing. She runs Killer Unicorns with me. Mm-hmm. She's a very close friend of mine. And we were just talking about end games. And I think mine's changed.
Okay.
I think it used to be a certain thing. And I think now, I think my end game is going to be dealing more with, I don't want to say teaching. And I don't mean leaving comedy at all, but I mean, I don't just want to play at clubs and just do sets. Mm-hmm. I am very much an activist, like you pointed out. Mm-hmm. And I think you know why. It's not just this case. I've been falsely accused of other things by women who have been mentally ill. Mm-hmm. I'm an activist for a lot of things. And I think my end goal is to travel the nation and teach people about diversity in the right way. And people are like, well, what do you mean the right way? Well, you guys will find out. My new comedy album Blessed is gonna drop soon here, and you'll hear what I have to say about it. We need to take personal responsibility for ourselves. We need to clean up our own homes before we start saving the world. Because if you don't love yourself and if you don't take care of yourself, you can't help anybody. Mm-hmm. You can't write jokes. Your world is going to implode. And I want to help people who, because I felt like that one time. Mm-hmm. I did. I felt like if I could just save everybody else, I'd be fine. And the truth is, it goes the other way around. Save yourself first. And I don't mean that in a religious way. Get your own life in order. And I'm sure you know that as a mom.
Yeah.
You had to. You didn't have a choice. And some people are running out here in this, running amok. And I'm not talking about the protests or anything like that. I mean in life.
Yeah.
We have to take accountability for the things we say and the things we do. And again, being a truth teller, a truth seeker, I would like to, and I've been saying this since I graduated when I was 23 years old, I would like to, here's my end game, use my entertainment and my comedy as a way to cultivate, promote social and political awareness, diversity, acceptance, and love.
Awesome. I don't think there's anything else that we can top with to end. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much. You are just amazing. I really want to get you on my show.
Thank you.
I want to buy you a latte for all the times I had to reschedule. I want to go take a hike. You're a great human. And thank you. Seriously, really, you're a joy to work with. I'm just like, she is a pop, and a mom and a, like, you're like everything. When I grow up, I hope I'm like you.
I'm just going to talk to you more because I feel great about myself right now.
I almost became a therapist.
Thank you.
Well, I appreciate it. I'll let you go because I know you have to do your time. But thank you again so much for having me, Stephanie. And I'm going to tell everyone about your wonderful podcast and to subscribe.
Thank you so much. And definitely can't wait to get everybody out to Killer Unicorns once you guys are back up and running.
Thank you so much. Take care. Be safe out there.
All right. You too. Bye.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you guys so much. I'm Julia.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode, guys. I hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as I enjoyed being a part of it. I want to make sure to thank Julia for sitting down with me and being so open and candid with this conversation. Also, make sure you follow her on Instagram under Julia Pels. She's also under @queercomedian.
Make sure to follow Killer Unicorns show. I can't wait for the world to reopen so that show can come back. I learned so much at such a great time. I hope you guys did as well. I also need to make sure that I say thank you to Dave the Prophet for providing the music. His beats were provided by Curtis King. As always, I am Stephanie Michelle. This has been Funny with Funny, and I hope you guys enjoyed.
I told my mama on the phone, it ain't no check to check. No more Honda Civics, baby, time to whip that back. Lyrics, beats, and the hooks, I'm a triple threat. Glow up on my Jesus piece, now I'm living blessed. Looney Bin, BYE, you know we down to ride. Try to kill me with this mic, suicide. Since I got on man, all I hear is fucking lies. More money, more problems, fucking certified. Doja Cat, throw it back. David blowing back, blowing up on Super Saiyan. But I'm fucking holding back. Never stop until I put my fucking city on the map. 3 a.m. on Ocean Air, put the pedal to the max.
Comedy became a way to cope. It became a way to deal with the everyday noise of life.